Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Night Shadows. I'm Stuart Best. Where the paranormal is normal. Where that which you thought you knew, you didn't. And where the future can be known, if you know exactly where to look.
Well, good evening, everyone. We hope to have Richard Shaw with us. He hasn't called in yet, but I'm going to try and call him. We got Larry. How you doing there, Larry?
Hey, Stuart. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm going to try and call and see if I can get him. I don't know if he mistook the time or what happened, but let's try it and see. So what's new on that tsunami while I'm trying to get him?
Well, as you well know, there's been a number of earthquakes. They called it an 8, actually, out on the Solomon Islands, the beginning of that, and then up to the 7.8, I believe. And then this evening, we've had a 7 and some 6s.
Yep.
So it's still rocking.
Here he is. I think, well, this is the call. I'm new to all this. Yeah, that's annoying, isn't it? I mean, I think there's something really happening here.
Hello?
Hello, Richard.
Hello, Richard.
How are you?
Hi.
No. We wanted to... Hello? Are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, this is Stuart.
Okay.
And...
Hey, Stuart.
So how are you doing?
I wanted to
bring you on to talk about your new, as much as you can. I know there's probably a lot you don't want to give away, but your Torah Codes Into Darkness. How's that coming along?
Oh, well, that's been out for a while, but we keep finding interesting new stuff. Did you want to Skype with me?
I don't know if I can. I don't think that works very well here. What number would you be using on Skype? I don't have it on my computer.
Oh, well, that's okay then. We can just do it on the phone if you'd prefer.
Yeah, we might better. Do you have a Skype number that I could watch for?
Well,
because I don't know how that works.
Oh, I thought we did Skype last time for some reason.
Well, maybe
but,
we did. What number would that show up on my board?
It would be Pinlight 1. That's my Skype name.
Okay, does that come in on the regular board, Larry? Do you know? I don't.
No, I'm not familiar whether it comes in as a telephone number or Pinlight 1. I'm not sure.
Well, if you're doing Skype, that's my Skype name, so that's what you'd use. But if you guys don't have Skype, then we can do it on the phone. That's quite all right.
Okay. Yeah, we probably better do that. So what's the latest news that you have on this into the end to darkness, the Torah Codes?
Well,
what's the latest on that?
Well, Into Darkness was the film that we did and released last year, and it's been up on Amazon and also on Vimeo, and it's basically an overview of the Torah Codes. But since then, we've been working on even more tables that I'm trying to remember what we talked about last time, but we were interested in looking up tables that we could find on Donald Trump.
Right. Did you find anything?
What happened was Professor Rips writes me with some really interesting information, but he was writing with concerns about America and felt that it was slipping into some sort of abyss. Now, this was before the election or anything like that happened. And I had written an article that went up on L.A. Marzulli's news mag, basically on corruption. And I had found this article apparently was a saved chat room discussion with a cloaked FBI agent and just normal people that wanted to know what the heck was going on in the government because things were so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So he released all of this information, and I kind of edited out the extraneous stuff and put that into my article and said, you know, I have no way to vet this, but if this is true, it's really an indictment on our current government. And I sent that to Professor Ripps, that article. A couple of days later, he comes back with these tables that were so phenomenal, I couldn't believe it. And I didn't ask him to do tables. But based on that, the information in the article that I sent him, he sent me back this table that said Hillary. He found the name Hillary in it with a skip of only two characters, which is more than coincidental. And then in a vertical row in the same table, it says Comey covers up. Now, Comey covers up is in a skip of 513 characters in a complete sentence. Just above that, in another complete sentence, it says for the mail. And for the mail was also with a skip of 513 characters, which is just unheard of.
Wow.
And then on the left to all of that is this really interesting vertical line that says, making use by their foundation, now referring to the Clinton Foundation.
Right.
Now, making use by, that part of the sentence, was found in a skip of 513 characters, and their foundation was a skip of 513. And then superimposed over that line of text with a larger skip is the word servers.
Wow.
So everything is right there. Hillary with a skip of two, making use by their foundation, servers for the mail, Comey covers up. All that's in a single table. So then a few days went by, and he sent me this other table, and it was really kind of dire. It said, D. Trump, this is in a vertical sentence, and then to the right of it, it says, the name of his assassin.
Wow. Good boy.
So that was pretty dark, and we're going, well, how could that possibly be? We know that he's in danger, and a lot of people believe that he is, because there's crazies out there that were supporting Hillary that are banding together to try to murder Trump. Now, he came out with this table before the news media was coming out with pictures of people scrolling graffiti on walls that said, kill Trump. Kill Trump supporters, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought maybe that this table was referring to the zeitgeist of the times, that that was in the news and so forth. But then when that table came in, that's been, oh, I don't know, I guess it's been 3 weeks ago. Time flies. Rabbi Glazerson happened to be visiting me here in Los Angeles. So he's over at my studio, and we're examining Ripps's table. And I said, you know, it'd be interesting to keep searching that line of text to see if there is a name in there, a possible Trump assassin. And they worked on that, but then Glazerson comes up with a table, which was really amazing. Using Ripps's skip of D. Trump, he finds in the same table United States, a threat, Cyrus in a vertical line next to D. Trump, president in 5777, which is our 2016, the overlap between the 2 years.
Right.
And then it said Murder, and then it said Kislev 5. Now, Kislev 5 is December 5.
Right, yeah.
Which is interesting because before, the election was held on Chesvan, which is the Hebrew calendar year for the second month of the year. Chesvan 7 was our November 8th. But in this case, Kislev 5 is the same as December 5.
No.
Well, December 5.
Go ahead.
December 5 has come and gone and nothing happened. But then today, if I can find it fast enough here, I was just, this is why I'm a little bit late getting to the phone here. I apologize.
Oh, no
I was
problem.
Trying to find.
We're glad to have you on.
Let's see here. Let's see. Is it the Daily Star? Let's see here. I think it's the Daily Star. Let's see here. The problem is I found this on my other laptop. But anyway, it was, maybe I can find it by searching this other thing so I can give you guys the actual link. This is all this happened just minutes ago.
Wow. Well, you know, Richard. You know, Richard, after you had found some of that information, you know, there was a lot of prayer went up. You know, I alerted a bunch of intercessors without really noting what information that I might have access to at all. And we had a lot of intercessors praying that from Friday around till December the 5th, Monday. And so there was a lot of intercession going on, you know, and we don't know. Sometimes there are delays. You remember with the Netanyahu situation, it was similar.
Well, yeah, exactly. Here we go. Here's another link. Maybe this is out of the Inquisitor. There's a fundraiser. This basically gives the same information that was in the Star. The Star is kind of a UK magazine and a bit of a tabloid. But this was also I'm just the reason why I'm trying to find everything I can was because of Glidgeson's table on Kislev 5 and nothing happened. And then all of a sudden now I'm finding these websites that on the day after that, that says the dark web has turned potentially deadly for the Trump because after an admittedly contentious and divisive election, someone has apparently reportedly set up a dark web website to raise money and collect information for a Trump-Pence assassination. According to multiple reports, the clearly illegal website went live last week and has been raising cash to take out the new president and his VP. This was also mentioned on RT. Well, what I think is so tremendous about this is that this came out, let me see when this story was written. One that I read earlier this evening was posted on December 6th, and I didn't happen to run into it until now. But this one says, it makes the hair on my arm stand up, guys. I mean, it really does. 10:21 a.m., December 5, 2016.
Hmm.
Wow.
So they're playing for keeps. I've often wondered, how in the world can the New World Order, which has been, you know, spending billions, if not trillions, and decades of planning, allow someone like Trump to come in and undo everything they've done? I just can't fathom that they would allow that. They'll go to any lengths to stop it.
I think they actually, their brainwashing technique backfired on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the elites thought that Trump had no chance, and then when they were so severely beaten by him, I think their people were so shocked that they didn't know how to respond other than anger. And of course, there were Soros attempts, you know, to generate violence, you know, afterwards. That, you know, we know that they were bussing people into various towns just to, you know, create riots and looting and stuff. And horrible what's happening. But this article in RT came out on December 5th. That's when Glazison's table said murder. Isn't
wow.
that incredible?
Yeah. So, is there anything on the fact that he will be, or is he just kind of, you're going to be hit warnings that if he pays attention to, they won't be able to do anything? Now, I do notice, or know on Friday, that Friday the 5th, that Trump suddenly and very abruptly changed his schedule.
Well, when this happened, I have to say, guys, I'm really kind of blown away with all this. It's just, again, the Torah codes have proven to be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't know if they are or not, but you know, Trump's son-in-law,
yes.
Jared, it's Cushman, I think.
I think that's his name, yeah, I think you're right. Something like that, actually.
He's married to Ivanka.
Yes.
And Jared has been trained in the Orthodoxy, Jewish Orthodoxy. So what happened was Glazerson said, can you please get a message to Trump to warn him and give him these tables? I said, well, I would if I could. I don't know how to get to Trump. I don't know him personally. And he said, well, but we could go through his son-in-law. And I said, hey, if you'll get me an email address, I will write it up. Next thing I know, they're sending me an email address. So I wrote an article. I started out with a comparison between Trump and Cyrus that Glazerson found in the Torah codes. I said, I don't need to explain about the Torah to you because I know you already know about that. So I'm just telling you what the world experts on the Torah codes have discovered about Donald Trump. And the first table was found 7 months ago by Rabbi Glazerson that talked about Trump and Cyrus and making a comparison between the two. And Cyrus in those days was a form of a Mashiach character because he basically liberated Israel and rebuilt the temple for them.
Yes.
And that's what they think Trump is now. A lot of them think Trump is like a Mashiach character, not the Messiah, but a Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that's pretty fascinating. So I sent that, and then I sent the tables on murder and assassination. And of course, when my friend Bob, when I told him what I had done, he said, well, I'm staying away from you because now there'll be like black like SUVs coming by to pick you up.
Yeah.
He's thinking I'm the one that's trying to do it, and we're just trying to warn him.
Mm-hmm.
So now with finding this stuff that I've just found today, I'm just blown away. They all came out on the 5th of December, all these articles on
well,
the assassination
was,
of Donald Trump.
Yeah, it was Ivanka that went over suddenly and to talk to her
well,
dad and messed up his whole schedule. Hello?
Well, I sent the information to them before, you know, long before the 5th, and I said, look, I'm just sending this because this is highly unusual for the professors and rabbis to be doing this because we don't tend to make predictions using the Torah codes, but it's only because Rips's table that he found that said name of the assassin came up with a p-value of 2,000,000 to 1.
Well,
and when that happens, you can't ignore it. There's something to it.
Well, remember, Richard, I'm sure you remember the first book on the Bible codes years ago by Michael Drosnin. The very same thing occurred when they ran the assassination code on Rabin. You remember how he was assassinated, right, and they found the assassin's name in the code later on.
Right, exactly. That was Yitzhak Rabin. They found his, it said, assassin will assassinate. And that was found a year before it happened. And actually, Michael Drosnin went to Israel to talk to the authorities there about it, and nobody knew what to do because there wasn't enough information in the table to know when or who or anything, because they didn't understand that's not how the Torah code tables work. You have to put all the information in and see if it exists. It doesn't, you know, sometimes you'll find words that you're not looking for. They call it snooping, and they don't really condone that because then it's like it could just be random chance that that word is there and it may not mean anything. But if you're looking for something specific. But what is really fascinating, guys, is that this whole process got me looking into the book of Ezra, and I didn't get very far because in chapter 2 of Ezra, it talks basically, it's one of these boring kind of genealogy kind of things. It's not so-and-so begat so-and-so, but it's basically who the numbering of each of the tribes and the different people that were released and coming back to join everyone else in Israel because Cyrus has set them free. And it's, you know, 347 of this tribe and 203 of that and 862 of, you know, I mean, there's all these numbers. It goes on and on and on. And then it gets down to the very end, and there's a few people trickling in that were not allowed to eat, they say, of the holy priestly food because they didn't know what their background was, okay? So they were told, these people, the few that didn't know who they were told to report to the high priest to be ministered to by the Urim and Thummim.
Yeah.
Now, the Urim and Thummim is the perfect lights that were built into the breastplate of the ephod, which most Christians call the ephod.
Uh-huh.
And you could ask it questions, and it would light up and give you an answer. So here they were using the ephod just to find out who these people were. And here we are talking about Trump and Cyrus and using the Torah codes to get information about Trump's assassination. And when I realized what was happening, I couldn't believe it.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. And I looked that up because I've got the book of Esdras, first and second Esdras, and I looked it up in first Esdras. And what was so shocking, you know, it said exactly what you said, and it had a verse which was really interesting. It said that Nehemiah and the governors ordered them not to take of the consecrated food until a priest arose clothed with the powers of direction and the truth.
Right. And so basically,
that's the Urim and the Thummim.
Right. Basically, the Urim and Thummim means, one means perfect and the other means lights, the perfect lights. And that was a panel or something. We don't know exactly what it looked like, but I wrote Glazerson because once he called it the perfect light, and I wrote him back, I said, I need to know if the ancient Hebrew says light or lights, plural. And he writes me back, lights, plural.
Huh.
So all of a sudden then it dawned on me because there was a mandate given that they couldn't use any metallic objects to build the ephod.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how much of it was built by the Israelites, and how much of it was like angelic technology. So I really got to thinking about that. Why could they not do that? And they used a tool for the engraving on these stones called the Worm Shamir. which was basically a which was basically some kind of radioactive isotope.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Are we going into a break?
No. No, that was a phone. I'm just not answering. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Keep going.
The music playing, so I was gonna back out here and let you guys.
No, I don't
take
breaks. So yeah, keep going. That's fascinating.
So last night I talked with David Avraham, who's a friend of mine in Israel, and I shared this information with him, and he said, yes, that's true. They couldn't use any metallic objects to build this. And I said, well, just like you wouldn't want to use any metallic objects if you were building an iPhone, because you'd ruin it. If you were building a sapphire screen for the iPhone, you wouldn't want to go after it with a hammer and chisel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is like high-tech electronics that, you know, backlit devices that light up, right? So
yeah.
I'm saying, you know, I'm thinking that the Urim and Thummim was something like that. That it was had electronics involved or something, and it had some spiritual connection. Well, according to David Avraham, it worked when the high priest was in the Holy of Holies. And of course that would make sense, because you're around the Ark of the Covenant and you're standing there with the, you know, pillar of cloud in front of you, and the whole place is illuminated, and there's energy like flowing all over the place, and if you don't die from the experience, then I could see how that could power his breastplate.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, it wasn't talking about people lining up in the Holy of Holies, because first of all, they're not allowed in there, and the high priest would have to be going back and forth into the Holy of Holies. And to me, that doesn't make sense, that's
right.
What was happening. I think this thing, he was just standing out there, and it was just lighting up and giving him the answer. Oh, you're originally from the tribe of Benjamin. Oh, you're from, you know, this tribe. Or, you know, he was being able to, basically the ephod was answering those questions. Well, now here we are, the 21st century, using the Torah codes, which is from that same book, the Torah, that all this other
yes.
stuff is mentioned.
Yeah.
And we're getting information about Trump, which is connected to Cyrus. It's just too weird for words. It's just like, I mean, all of this stuff is so incredible that this is happening now, and that we're actually seeing it happen. And so Glazerson started doing tables again on End to Darkness, which is one of his favorite phrases, because that's significant on the Torah codes,
yes.
how they were found. And, you know, they were found in, the software was discovered in 1976. Rabbi Yaniv, Professor Rips, and we tell this story in the film. And that was 1976. And that number comes up in Torah codes quite often. But he keeps finding a table that says Torah codes in a complete sentence. And then off to the right, it five times it says ephod, 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 ephod. Like
wow.
The ephod's connected to the Torah codes. And then in the same table is also the word pinlight. Why that's in there, I have no idea. He keeps finding that. I don't ask him to look up my company name. I would be almost kind of embarrassed to ask Glazerson to do that. He just does it anyway. And then he
mm-hmm.
puts it up on YouTube. You can see pinlight is involved somehow in the ephod and in the Torah codes.
You're
and
probably
found
the
it like
revelator.
I don't know. I don't know what I am. I mean, it's like, but I do believe that there was some incredible things happening in Egypt and with the Torah. The way the Torah was given to us was supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not diminish anything about Yeshua or anything like that. It's just something else. It happened prior to that. It has to do with the Jewish homeland and them getting this information. And also, for a while, God was actually speaking with an audible voice to the children of Israel. And I don't know how many people actually know that, but there was be a fire like at the on Mount Sinai, and God's voice was like literally heard. Audio voice was coming out of it. And I asked David last night, I said, look, I'm trying to find this reference because I heard from somebody, and I don't remember if it was from the Midrash or the Zohar or one of the Jewish mystical texts, that when God would speak to his children, it was so powerful that their spirits would jump out of their bodies.
Hmm.
And that's why they asked Moses to talk to God for them, because they couldn't take it anymore.
Oh.
And they had to stay miles away from the mountain.
Yeah. Have they found anything on an actual assassination in the Torah codes at all? In other words, have they found anything that suggests Trump will make it all the way to the presidency and do the, help with the Third Temple? Or have they found something that says he's not even going to take an office seat? Or haven't they done that yet?
There's no specifics on that per se. There are specifics on the corruption in the government, specifically mentions Hillary, and these other things, which I've mentioned. But I guess what we need to do, I'm sending these websites out to Rips and to Glazerson just to show them that their tables are correct, which is really amazing when you think about it, because their tables were discovered weeks before this happened.
Wow. Well, I'm sure they're busy.
And Rips has been very communicative lately. And I sent them information, and Glazerson knows this too, that JLTV is going to be airing Torah Codes Into Darkness next month, January. And then it'll be airing in March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. You skip November, and then it's airing again in December. So it's going to be airing at least 10 times next year on JLTV. And it'll be on DirecTV and Comcast and Spectrum and a few local affiliate stations. So
wonderful.
Getting the film ready for that has been kind of keeping me busy.
I would think, yes. Well, that's great news, though, because that's probably why Pinlight is mentioned. This is going to be
I don't know. There is these other tables that say Torah codes, and then Glazerson found it, said will be distributed, and it lists this year and last year. And we released it last year, and now this year it's being distributed, and then next year in the 5777, it's going to be on national television and also Canada. And I don't know who else will be able to pick it up.
Oh.
But we're still encouraging people to go to the website and get their own hard copy or download it, because that helps us to do more of these. They're expensive to make. We still are, digging out of the production of the first one. And, to do the second one, it would be even more expensive, because the first one, even though we had help in raising the money, and I give David Greenhill the credit for having the guts to put the startup cash into the film, and then we raised some more on Indiegogo. And then a man I didn't even know, a Jewish man from Florida, heard what we were doing and sent us $1,000 donation to go into the film. And people, was really trying to help. They wanted to see this film come out.
Yeah.
But now we've got so much material for a second film that it would really be even better probably than the first one. But I have to be able to pay my people this time.
You have any other questions, Larry?
Well, you know, I was thinking it's interesting, the title, Tor Codes in the Darkness. And, Richard, I got to thinking because, and if people don't realize what JLTV is, that's Jewish Lives Television, basically. I get
that's
it
right.
On, you know, yeah, I get it. And it also goes over into Israel, and it's the Jewish people. And what's so interesting, I told Stuart the other day, I was talking to him, and I told him, you know, it's almost prophetic. Torah Codes in the Darkness is actually going out now to Israel, to the Jewish people, and what people, who would need it worse? People that had been blind and couldn't see, or blinded and couldn't see, or people that can just see through a glass darkly. And I said, I think the time has come, and that's probably prophetic, that the eyes of the Lord may be turning towards Israel again, and that's why Torah Codes in the Darkness is reaching out to go there.
Well, you know, the whole prophecy where Israel becomes a burdensome stone, you know, that whole scripture,
yes.
that's kind of what's happening right now. And so what I was told recently, that a lot of the rabbis in Israel are seeing that, you know, there's all these nations coming after them, and, you know, there's this push by Kerry and Obama to try to have a two-state solution before Obama leaves office in January. And, of course, that's a horrible idea. And knowing what we know about the whole Palestinian conflict, that's never going to work. They'll never be satisfied until they have the whole land.
Oh, yes.
The land for peace does not work. It just doesn't work. I mean, they've given away land to the nth degree, and now they're saying no more. It doesn't work. It's obviously not working. So I'm not in favor of them doing that, but Kerry and Obama are pressing for it, and that could turn around and backfire on them, and also on America. But what I'm hoping is that Trump will get in time to stop that. What the rabbis see all this happening in the burdensome stone scripture, and they see it as this is a setup for the time of Mashiach. They're all looking for the Messiah's return. And Glazerson
yes.
keeps finding tables on Mashiach and Nibiru, which is also kind of a Zohar, Midrash, mystical text anomaly, where basically what they believe, and which is really so intriguing to me, because they don't realize how closely their texts parallel Christian texts. And occasionally
yes.
when I feel comfortable with Glazerson and he understands where I'm coming from, I will share those other texts with him. I'll say, look, we're all on the same page here, because they believe that during the flood of Noah, according to their mystical texts, which really are fascinating actually, the mystical texts aren't considered scripture, but nevertheless, someone was inspired to write these.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them talks about new stars will appear in the heavens during that time, and that happened
mm-hmm.
during the flood of Noah. Now, those stars supposedly came from Orion, is what it says in their ancient texts. So now we're looking for Nibiru, and they believe that that has to happen before the Messiah returns. And also, they believe that UFOs and all of those kind of things are all part of the phenomena that we're about to experience. So they aren't put off by any of those ideas. In fact, they're excited by it, because to them, it means that the Messiah's return is imminent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe probably it is. There was a rabbi back in the 1200s. I don't remember his name, but he pinpointed 2017 that the Messianic era would begin, which would indicate that possibly
yeah.
Daniel's week would be part of the Messianic situation. But in the Omega,
they believe that 57.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say they believe that 5777 is the year of completion.
Yes. Yeah, and I think what's happening with your production verifies it, 5777, because that's when they would need it. That's when they need to understand that the Lord is talking to them through the Bible codes, the Torah codes.
Well, here's something really strange that happened today. And I bought this little drone that has a camera on it, just a little cheap one. And I was going to give it to my grandson. But when we looked at the package after it came in, it said 14 years or older, and he's like, you know, 7. So it's not going to work for him. So I didn't know what to do with it. So I said, well, maybe, Mary, I'm talking to my wife. I said, maybe I can, you know, use it for, like, getting some shoots or something where I need just a little tiny drone, you know. So I'll just go ahead and use it. So I unwrapped it today and took it out in the back. And the problem with these little drones that you get for $150, they have no GPS on them, so they just can, you know, you're controlling them by a transmitter, but they're really unwieldy compared to a professional drone. I also have, like, a unique Typhoon 4K drone that locks up the satellites, and basically I can find it, and it sends me a picture back, and I used it in watchers, and I'm using it now in almost everything I do, and it's just an awesome piece of equipment. So this other little toy, I thought, well, maybe in a place where, you know, I can sneak a drone into a foreign country, this little toy will actually get me something that I couldn't get otherwise, you know. So I send it up, and it won't come back. It just keeps climbing, and it won't respond to controls. And the thing flew way, I mean, it must have been 200 feet into the air and zoomed over the top of the house and disappeared. Now, I had no idea where it went because I was no longer in control of it. I came around to the front of the house, and the controls were, like, dead, not doing anything, typical, and it didn't land in the front yard. It was like, gone. So I thought, well, you know, we live in a gated community here with a wall around the whole place. We're here in Porter Ranch. So I thought, I'm just going to walk out and see if I can find it. It's like a needle in a haystack. It could be on someone's roof. It could be caught in a tree. It could be in a bush. I mean, it's like, and it's tiny. It's like as big as my hand, a little bit bigger, I guess, too. So it's not like going to show up that much. And I figured the batteries in it are probably already dead, so it's not going to respond. So there's a million reasons why I wouldn't find this thing, right? Or some kid has found it and picked it up and ran off with it. You know, so I walk all the way to the main gate, and I walk out front. And I told the Lord, I said, you know, I'm praying for my friend Rabbi Glazerson that you'll make yourself known to him. And I quoted scripture to God. You know, in Jeremiah it says that if we seek him and find him, and we'll find him if we search for him with your whole heart, it says.
Mm-hmm.
And I really can't think of anyone that has searched for God more than Rabbi Glazerson has. Every day he's looking for Torah codes. Every day he writes and sends me a new one. He's just dedicated to doing this. And I said, you know, if that's true, then you can also help me find this silly little drone that I have no idea where it is. But you know where it is, Lord. And I said, I know this is a stupid request, but it would really be great if you'd help me find it. And I'm looking in the trees, and I'm looking around front, and I walk clear around on Corbin Avenue, where our houses are located, our development is. There's a big wall up there, and there's shrubs, and nothing. Didn't see anything. So I turned around and came back and thought, well, that was a stupid request, God, that I just asked you about. Like, presence of mind to turn the remote on again, and you flip the joystick until the light stays on, and you know you're connected, and the light stayed on. And I thought, well, I don't know if it's telling me it's on or not, because it's like a toy almost at this point. And so I moved the connection, and off in the distance I hear this buzzing noise, you know,
And I'm going, it can't be. Now, this thing had been sitting out for about an hour and a half. And the battery life is like 12 minutes, okay? It's like 12 minutes of battery life. So I kept doing that, and I keep hearing it, and then I see one of the little LEDs flickering through a bush over the side of the fence. So I climb up this little thing, and there it is, lodged in a bush, totally in perfect shape, not damaged, still functional. And I just picked it up, and I said, Lord, why do you care so much for stupid little things we ask you for?
Because
I mean, I was just
them.
Like, couldn't believe it. It's just, yeah, but it's beyond anything that I would expect. I mean, it's like, okay, this is really cool. So if you can do this for me, then you can appear in Glazerson's room for him or something. You know, this is what I'm saying. I mean, this is like, because if anyone deserves it, it's him. And, you know, and his relationship is very strange. It's with an Orthodox rabbi and a Christian. And it's like, I don't know what to say about it. And we're not in agreement on everything, but we have tremendous love and respect for each other. And here's the guy that sends me all of this information. And now Professor Rips, who's just like, he's a man that if you're standing next to him, it's almost like you can feel the Holy Spirit in the room. Now, that's really weird. I mean, it's like this guy has kind of like an aura about him, and everyone I've talked to says the same thing. Everyone that knows Rips personally tells me the same thing. They tell me, I mean, Michael Drosnin in his books says, I've never met anyone like Professor Rips. And when I've heard him on the radio, he says the same thing. And yet Michael Drosnin is the first one to say he doesn't believe in God.
Yeah.
And yet he's working on the Torah codes. Makes no sense, but that's what he says. And he's still getting information.
Well, the Lord is
rising up. Yeah, I mean, it's like whoever's willing to do it. I guess there's not enough people willing to really dig out this information. And, you know, we're also trying to get the software updated because I'm really worried about that. Rabbi Glazerson isn't so much, but when he was here, his computer died. And I said, well, what operating system is currently compatible with Soft Torah, that's the name of the software. It's professional software. It's nothing for consumer level stuff. This is like for the rabbis and professors use. It's what they use, and it's like really tweaky, and they put numbers in and they're pressing F keys and everything else. I mean, this is like the professional level software, okay? And Professor Alexander Rotenberg was the guy that came up with this version because a lot of people know this, but early on there wasn't this graphic representation of the tables that looked like a crossword puzzle like what we have today. That was Dr. Rotenberg's brainchild. That's the software that we're all still using. So it'll only run on Windows 7.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, Richard, that if I remember right, before that, remember Rips was actually beginning to do Torah codes to some degree with a pencil.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you watch the film Into Darkness, Rips told me something I didn't know. I mean, I knew they didn't have much memory back in those days. I mean, the first computer they ever used was an Apple II. And they only put part of the book of Genesis into the computer because that's all the RAM they had. And but you have to remember back to those days, and that's a long time ago. We're talking almost 40 years ago now.
Yeah.
And how primitive computers were, and the idea of fonts was still in the future. That was a Steve Jobs thing. Really, fonts beautiful fonts didn't come out until the Macintosh was invented in 1984. So we're talking 1976 through 80. They're just looking at a green screen with flickering numbers on it. And the other computers of the day were like the Radio Shack TRS-80, the little IBM. All these were like pathetic little, you know, DOS machines, mm-hmm. essentially, disk operating system, you know, just pathetic
yep.
machines.
Yep.
Apple was really one of the best designed ones. But so what they had to do, and I'm going too long here, and I'll try to make a long story short. I just get technical sometimes. They took all of the Hebrew letters and converted them into just numbers. So like if it was the English alphabet, like A would be 1, B is 2, C is 3, that kind of thing. So they did the same thing with the Hebrew alphabet and just stuck that in to the computer. And then they would get their results back as a string of numbers. I mean, you can imagine how confusing that would be, terribly confusing to me. And I told, you know, Rips, even in the film, and Lee's filming us talking about this, and I said, that sounds really hard to me. And he goes, oh, it was quite simple, actually. And I'm thinking, yeah, it's simple for you. It would not be simple for me. So he said, it was quite easy.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, he looked at it as being really easy, but I need a graphic representation to understand anything. That's the way my mind works. But
yeah,
he's a mathematician, so, you know, for him it's no problem.
Do you know if they have done any Torah codes on Antarctica? There's something going on down there, and it's a big mystery. Do you know if they've done anything on that at all?
I mentioned that to Glazerston, and I need to talk about it with Professor Rips. I just need to call Rips because I don't remember who all has gone down there. I know Obama's been down there, and so has Kerry.
Yep.
Joe Biden may also have gone down there.
Yep.
And possibly
the Pope.
Possibly Vladimir Putin.
And the Pope has been down there. They're all going down there, and there is a pyramid they've discovered down there, but I think there's a lot more to it than that. Are you familiar with Cliff High and the Bots? His latest release is all about, he talks about this mystery of Antarctica and how the discoveries are going to be made that are going to all but gut religious belief.
Well, I mean, my thoughts were that either they're going down there because they've rediscovered what Admiral Byrd wrote about back in the 30s
mm-hmm.
and 40s. He went down, you know that story in his diary. He wrote that they flew down there. All of a sudden it got warm and there was grass growing, and these beings met them and took them into like a hollow earth situation, and they were highly advanced people that we wouldn't see here, and there might even be underground cities down there. Now that's one thought. If that's really occurring, how would we ever know? And if satellite maps, they would hide that from us, so we couldn't see it. Or they're down there because they're looking at the South Pole telescope and they're looking to see Nibiru, which is supposedly coming up through the Oort cloud, and maybe that's the best place you can actually see it, is from the South Pole. That would also not surprise me. But then there's also, you know, several scientific observation centers down there. The Neumeier Station, that's been a very hotbed of information. In fact, way back when we were shooting Watchers 5, I think it was, where we were talking about Planet X and we were interviewing Marshall Masters.
Mm-hmm.
There was one shooting location that, if you've seen the film, there was one shooting location where there were these big satellite dishes behind one of the guys we were interviewing.
Yeah.
And I had found that location a week or so earlier, just at random. I was driving through
the Santa Monica Mountains, and I thought, what the heck is that? And the chain link fence happened to be unlocked and open, so I just drove on in. And I came up to this fence with an intercom system. And so I pushed the button, and the guy goes, hello. And I said, hi, I'm just curious. This is an interesting installation. What's this dish farm doing out here in the middle of nowhere? And he goes, oh, this is AT&T. And I said, oh, okay, great. I said, is there any way I could come in and check it out? And he said, sure. And he buzzes me in. You know, ask and you shall receive, right? So I go in there. There's this one dude running the whole operation. And I walk through the engineering room. And he goes, oh, this one's... Yeah. And basically, they show like a... On their oscilloscopes, they show like a spectrum analysis of the frequencies that particular dish is picking up.
Uh-huh.
And they had like, I don't know how many of them, they're like four or five big dishes, at least a couple of them had to be 10-meter dishes. And one of them was really low on the horizon. And I said, where's that dish beaming a signal to? And the guy said, we only use like 20 watts of power. I mean, it was really... Because the dish is so frigging huge,
mm-hmm.
it focuses the energy to such an extent that that's all they need.
Wow.
And he said, oh, that one's going to Antarctica.
Wow.
Oh.
I said,
well,
why
is
that going to Antarctica? Yeah. And he said, oh, they're doing scientific research down there.
Well, you may have heard that Buzz Aldrich went down there. And he got sick and was
taken
into his feeling?
He got sick. Yeah, I guess it's
well,
like part of it is like high altitude or something. He had altitude
sickness. There's a YouTube out which claims, now I don't know how you vet something like this, that he said that humanity's in trouble, basically, and that it's pure evil. Whatever it is they're looking into, whatever it is they found.
They found the source of evil, or they found something else?
Who knows? I mean, that's the way he worded it. It is pure evil. So, and a lot of these people are going down there, and you might want to ask the question is, why would an astronaut be going down there? You know? It's very, very interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, the astronaut would be a very credible witness if there was some sort of alien beings down there or something that he might have seen on one of his trips, and no one believes him.
Yeah.
I mean, none of that.
We only got about a minute and a half left.
Oh, my
Richard,
God.
How do people get a hold of you?
Oh, go to endtodarkness.com, or you can go to Pinlight.com, PINLIGHT.com, and one of those websites will give you all the information you need. But then there was this, I have to mention this quickly, there was this UFO flap that, Larry, you know about this too, I'm sure, that happened in Turkey just a few days ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where
yes.
there was a, they could see like a flying humanoid being, and it was really jerky and unstable, and I sent the clip to Jaime Masson in Mexico City, and he wrote me back a long letter, and he said the guy who filmed that, he knew all about it. So there were 20 witnesses. The guy that filmed it was using a telescope, and the entity that was floating in the air that was recorded on this camera was at the 3,000-foot level.
Wow.
And you couldn't even see it with a naked eye.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on. I probably should have gone for 2 hours, but we scheduled it for an hour. And
thank you, Richard.
I want to thank you for coming on. Thank you, Larry, for coming on. Good program. And hopefully we can get you back on, Richard.
Sorry it was a little disjointed at first. I was thinking we were on at 7, but I guess it's 7 for you and 5 for me. But anyway, that's typical of me to get my times mixed up.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yep. Good night.